अप्रात्यार्क्यार्निर्देश्यादिति केष्वापि निश्चया अत्रानुरूपं राजार्षे विमृशस्वमनीषया अप्र
There are also some thinkers who believe that no one can ascertain the cause of distress by argumentation, nor know it by imagination, nor express it by words. O sage amongst kings, judge for yourself by thinking over all this with your own intelligence. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Vaishnavites, the devotees of the Lords, do believe, as above explained, that nothing can take place without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. He is the Supreme Director, for He confirms in the Bhagavad Gita that He is the all-pervading Paramatma, stays in everyone's heart and keeps vigilance over all actions and witnesses all activities. The argument of the atheist that one cannot be punished for one's misdeeds unless proved before a qualified justice is refuted herein. For if we accept the perpetual witness and constant companion of the living being, a living being may forget all that he might have done in his past or present life, but one must know that in the same tree of the material body, the individual soul and the supreme soul as Paramatma are sitting like two birds. One of them, the living being, is enjoying the fruits of the tree, whereas the Supreme Being is there to witness the activities. Therefore, the Paramatma feature, the Supreme Soul, is actually the witness of all activities of the living being, and only by His direction can the living being remember or forget what he might have done in the past. He is, therefore, both the all-pervading impersonal Brahman and the localized Paramatma in everyone's heart. He is the knower of all past, present, and future, and nothing can be concealed from Him. The devotees know this truth, and therefore they discharge their duties sincerely, without being over-anxious for rewards. Besides that, one cannot estimate the Lord's reactions either by speculation or by scholarship. Why does He put some into difficulty and not others? He is the supreme knower of the Vedic knowledge, and thus He is the factual Vedantist. At the same time, He is the compiler of the Vedanta. No one is independent of Him, and everyone is engaged in His service in different ways. In the conditioned state, such services are rendered by the living being under the force of material nature. Whereas in the liberated state, the living being is helped by the spiritual nature in the voluntary loving service of the Lord. There is no incongruity or inebriety in His actions. All are on the path of the absolute truth. Bhishma Dev correctly estimated the inconceivable actions of the Lord. The conclusion is, therefore, that the sufferings of the representative of religion and the representative of the earth as present before Maharaj Parikshit were planned to prove that Maharaj Parikshit was the ideal executive head, because he knew well how to give protection to the cows, the earth, and the Brahmins, religious principles, the two pillars of spiritual advancement. Everyone is under the full control of the Lord. He is quite correct in his action when he desires something to be done by someone, irrespective of the consideration of the particular case. Maharaj Parikshit was thus put to test for his greatness. Now let us see how he solves it by his sagacious mind. Parikshit, traveling throughout the world to ascertain how all living beings were being protected and how the religious principles were being followed, happened to come upon this dastardly demoniac personality of Kali, lower than a Shudra in characteristic, cruel, dressed as a king, but abusing that position by beating in a wicked and terrible mood the innocent cow representing the earth, and the bull representing dharma, or religious principles. The bull is the father for all humanity, because in the natural God-given culture, the bull plows the fields and provides grains. Those grains are required for our very subsistence. Krishna says in Gita, all living beings, they are surviving on the basis of eating food grains. And it is the bull that naturally makes that available. Srila Prabhupada was very, very disturbed sometimes when he would see the big, big tractors and other high technological farm equipment. One time he went to New Talavan and they were giving him a tour of the farm, and they came to one place at the end of the tour where these big tractors. Prabhupada said, what is this? They said, these are to plow the fields. He said, then what will you do with the bulls? One tractor will put thousands of bulls out of work. They will not have any service. One tractor is driven by one driver, and thousands of human beings will be put out of work by that one person who could be plowing with the bulls. In this way, what you are doing is you are creating irreligion. From the economic point of view, unemployment, and you are depriving God's own beloved children in the form of the bulls, the service that God has given them on this earth. Prabhupada was very, very strong that you should train the oxen and the bull to do this work. You see, modern civilization is very passionate. Modern civilization wants very, very fast results with the least amount of energy. But the result is penny wise, pounds foolish. We get fast results. We get what we want quick. But in the end, our life and the whole society around us is put into great disarray. And ultimately, everything is taken away. We have seen in our own New Vrindavan community, the history speaks for itself. Srila Prabhupada made things very simple. Simple living, high thinking. New Vrindavan means always think of Krishna, always chant his names, always discuss his Lord glories, and be satisfied with a very simple life. Self-sufficiency. You train the male cows, the bulls, to plow the fields. You learn how to utilize them for that purpose. And the cows you protect very nicely and have them give milk. In this way, all your problems will be solved. In this way, New Vrindavan will be such a place that the whole world will come to see how your culture is progressing in Krishna's service. And at the beginning, I remember devotees were learning how to work oxen. In fact, I was one of them. That was one of my first services. There was an oxen named Brisham, and he was very naughty. Nobody liked him. He was very stubborn and very lazy. If you put any weight behind him, he would lay down and go to sleep. Because he was never trained properly. He was very big, but very lazy. So devotees, they tried to somehow or other get him to do some seva. They'd put some weight on him, and as soon as he'd feel the weight was a little heavy, you'd hit him with a little stick and say, "Go, go." And he would go to sleep. He would just lay down, and he was big. Once he lays down, you cannot pick him up unless he gets up. So devotees, they were very frustrated. They would sometimes beat him to get him to do something. And the more they'd beat him, the more he'd just be stubborn and sleep deeper and deeper. So at that time, I was very small, little new devotee. They were thinking that here's a useless person, let us give him a useless ox. So they sent him up, and there was Brisham and me. I was sent into the forest with a little axe. You know, axe that cuts trees? And we'd have to find trees that were already dead. We were not allowed to cut living trees. You'd have to go in the forest. New Vrindavan is very, very thick, dense forest. It's very beautiful. Miles, thousands of acres of thick, dense forest. Beautiful green trees everywhere. So you'd have to look to see a tree that had not a single leaf on it. And you'd have to test to see it was dead. Then you'd chop it. And then you'd have to make sure it didn't fall on you when it fell. There's a certain science. No one taught me the science. That was the problem. But somehow we figured it out. And the tree would fall. And then you'd cut the tree into some small pieces with the axe. And then you'd take Brisham. And you'd put the tree on the back of Brisham. And you'd say, "Brisham, go." And Brisham would lay down and go to sleep. I was thinking, how am I going to get this tree into where the temple is? Because we had no electricity or no gas burners. Like here, we have so much opulence. They bring in these gas tanks. But actually, this is not opulence. This is poverty. Real opulence is when you cut down trees and bring it. Prabhupada said, for cooking, first-class fuel is cow dung dried up. Second-class is wood. Gas is third class. And electricity is fourth class. So the deities, they don't have any prasad unless wood is brought into the kitchen to cut and to cook. And it's not that you have big supply. Whatever you bring in that day is what you have. So the cooks were saying, we need wood now. And I cut the tree, and Bhrishan was sleeping. For me to carry would be very difficult. For him to carry is very easy. So I was thinking, I cannot beat him. I don't have the heart to beat him. So I started to preach to him. He was very surprised. He was laying there. Every other time he laid down, everyone beat him. But I was preaching to him. So he actually opened his eyes and looked at me like, what are you doing? I was saying, Bhrishan, please, you are Krishna's very dear servant, the bull. And this is your dharma, your swadharma, to pull these pieces of wood to his kitchen for him to eat. So please, I will not beat you, but if you do not bring this wood, someone will beat me. So he actually, I could see, he looked at me, and he actually felt sorry for me. And he got up, and he pulled the wood. And there was only two or three people living at that temple, and when they saw that Bhrishan was pulling wood, they thought, how is this possible? Bhrishan is working. And I was standing behind, walking behind, and in this way, he was actually a very nice ox. He definitely did not work to his capacity. I had to chop the woods quite small. But yet he pulled them, and every day he would pull them. Every day I have to spend about half hour preaching to him. And then he would get up and pull. I never needed a stick. So, New Vrindavan was like this. And then there was many other ox teams. There was Bala and Deva. There was Bhima and Ganesh. And others. There was also horses. There was Tom and John. And Shaibya and Megapushpa. Who were named after two of Krishna's horses, as he chaired. And there was plowing going on, and cows were the center of the community. The cows were right in the very heart of the community. And the best devotees would go to milk the cows every day. And when a cow was pregnant and calf was going to be born, everyone in the community would stand waiting for the calf to be born, to have nice kirtan, to welcome her into the world. And at night, one devotee would stand 24-hour guard. And as soon as the cow started giving birth, he'd start blowing conch shells, and everyone in the community would come running to the barn with mirdangas and kartals and have beautiful kirtan to welcome Krishna's calf into the world. And they'd give garlands and do puja and everything like that. They'd give the cow nice laddus, mother cow. Very sweet cow bull. And the community was very gradually developing. But then the thought came. Some money started coming in somehow or other. That let us do everything quickly with tractors. And then after we get it done, then we'll get rid of the tractors and we'll bring back the cows and bulls. So the tractors came. First one little old tractor, then another, then another, then another. Soon the oxen were all sleeping. Bhrishyam was very happy. Actually, he wasn't very happy. He was actually very happy when he was pulling wood, when he was plowing fields. But then the oxen had nothing to do. The bulls had no service. They just became a burden. You feed them, cost so much in the winter to feed them, feed them, feed them, and they don't do anything, and they're just a burden. When you start seeing the bulls and the cows as burdens, rather as wonderful servants of the Lord who you are assisting, your whole consciousness changes. And soon the whole direction of the community shifted, and so much money and so much opulence and so much everything started coming in. And then it was time. Now, according to our schedule, we should get rid of all these tractors, get rid of all these other things, and go back to the oxen. But everything was just flowing in so profusely. How can we stop this momentum? So it just built and built and built and built and built. The cows were neglected. The bulls were completely out of their service year after year. Soon there were hundreds of bulls just sleeping and eating, doing no seva. The idea was that everything will develop very, very quickly, very fast, very nice. But then ultimately, because it was against the laws of nature, because it was not according to Prabhupada's instruction, everything fell to pieces. Everything was destroyed. And what was left? A completely poverty-stricken community with no money, with no credibility. Nobody coming. 25 years after Prabhupada gave this simple instruction. And now we're going back to the basics to start to learn the ox, to start to train the oxen again. The moral to the story, Prabhupada knows best. We have our conceptions, we have our ideas, we have all our modern science to tell us so many things, and it appeared wonderful for some time, it appeared glorious, but in the end, it created nothing but a disaster. If we would have just followed Prabhupada from the beginning, that slow but sure process of simple living, high thinking, by this time, the whole of the world would be coming to see what a wonderful community. One of the largest single interests in the world now is natural ecology. People are so much looking for alternatives, ecological and economic alternatives to the rat race of material civilization. And there is not a single example in the entire Western world of a self-sufficient community based on natural ecology. Not a single one. So many are trying, but no one has succeeded. If we would have just followed what Prabhupada said, we would have the most successful, the largest, and the most glorious natural, ecological, economic, spiritual community in the planet, and people from all around would be coming to see. And they would say, yes, this lifestyle is so perfect, it is so pure, it is so wonderful, that the philosophy must be the best. And that was Prabhupada's vision from the very beginning. But being influenced by modern ideas, we went astray. But now we're back, 25 years later, starting not from square one, but from negative 10. Because we have to just pick up all the broken pieces that have been created. But we learned a good lesson. And by Krishna's grace, devotees are really, really seriously taking Prabhupada's instructions to heart. And ultimately, the lesson is good because devotees will never turn to any other direction anymore. We know that Maya is a liar. Maya promises us everything, makes everything seem so nice, so easy, but her only business is to cheat us. We should trust our Guru Maharaj. We should trust the scriptures. They are giving us the perfect way of life by which we can be happy and we can make real solutions to the real problems of the world. So Maharaj Parikshit, he had this understanding. And when he saw the cow and the bull being neglected and abused, he was very upset. Srila Prabhupada told us that cow protection is a very important part of our preaching. And you cannot convince people of the reason to protect the cows and the bulls unless you show how they are useful to human society. Because half the cows that are born are male. They're bulls. In the Western countries, it's practically unmentionable what they do. If a cow is born, they'll get as much milk out of it as possible. When the milk production goes down, they kill them. For the bulls, they have no purpose whatsoever except to be killed. No purpose. They don't keep them for anything except some special pedigree. They keep them to inseminate others, and that's it. Then they kill. So Prabhupada says, how are you going to preach to people to protect the bull and the cow unless you show how they have a positive function to perform in society? Unless we work the bulls and show how they can supply grains in a completely natural way, factually, all of these big tractors, it has been proven that the way that they plow the earth is so damaging to the earth that after some years, the earth is actually depleted of its life-giving force. Whereas oxen, they plow the earth so gently that they actually invigorate Mother Earth. And the life and the power that the earth has within her. So if we show how the bull is very, very practical, very good, and very constructive to our social life, then people will think, yes, let us protect. But if you preach cow protection, but you do not show by example how valuable they are in their service to society, no one will take it seriously. So Srila Prabhupada thought that these farm communities were very, very, very important, essential. In America, Srila Prabhupada was inducing everyone to be distributing books like anything. New York, Los Angeles, Radha Damodar Traveling Sankirtan Party. He was just, I'm writing these books, you distribute them. In the cities, he wanted devotees preaching, college preaching, book distribution. But in New Vrindavan, he never said a word about book distribution or anything else. He said, you teach the society the value of the bull and the cows. You make a place of pilgrimage where everyone's just talking about Krishna and thinking about Krishna. And Vishnu Jan Maharaj, who was in charge of the biggest book distribution party in America, he used to come to New Vrindavan and he used to tell us that when we're preaching and distributing books, he said, ultimately all we can do is tell them, go to New Vrindavan and see for yourself what we're talking about. What is the use of reading about a Vedic culture if you can't show people a Vedic culture? So Prabhupada had a very, very deep vision to re-spiritualize human society on every level. We must disseminate knowledge, but we also must show practically that this knowledge has a culture that is to be applied in daily life by all classes. Varnashram Dharma. Daivi Varnashram Dharma, spiritual, according to our particular inclinations and propensities, we engage in Krishna's service. Brahman Chakshya Vaishya Shudra, Brahmachari Grihastha Vanaprasanyas. They are all simply meant for one purpose, Sam Siddhir Hari Toshanam, to please Krishna. And if Krishna is pleased, everything will come. Everything auspicious will come. And if Krishna is displeased, everything inauspicious will come in due course of time. Krishna says in Gita, what tastes like nectar in the beginning tastes like poison in the end. What tastes like poison in the beginning tastes like nectar in the end. What does this mean? If you want something cheap, if you want a shortcut, if you want sense gratification, if you want the easy life, it will be very nice now, but in the future you will suffer miserably. Krishna consciousness is a gradual process. Some people, they want to give you something very quick. I have seen in my travels, people, they touch you in the forehead and you see blinding lights and colors and you start tasting nectars in your mouth and you start hearing sounds in your ears. And you think, yes, yes, this is the highest truth. People can give you that. We have seen. We have experienced to some extent. People have this type of shakti, where they just touch you and you just start hallucinating. One Western person, he went to one guru like this, and the guru touched him in the forehead, and he started seeing lights and colors. He touched him in the ears and he started hearing beautiful sounds. He touched him in the nose and he started smelling incredible, incredible fragrances. He touched him in the mouth and he started tasting delicious flavors. He touched him on the body and he just started feeling all sorts of sensations, pleasurable sensations in the body. And he told me that, you know something? It's just like LSD. It's just like LSD. Because all those things happen when you take LSD. So I say, so then what this person is doing, his touch, is like LSD. You travel all the way to India, you could have stayed in America, you'd saved thousands of dollars and taken LSD. Because LSD, it comes down, and similarly all these sensations, you come down. So people want cheap things, fast things. This is not Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is a gradual but sure process. You chant your 16 rounds every day sincerely. You serve the Vaishnavas sincerely. You follow these regulative principles, read these books, live by this. And gradually, step by step, stage by stage, you become purified. It may take your whole life, but it's for certain. If we just follow this process, we will get the real thing. We will get Krishna Prema. We will get the real ecstasy of the soul. And there is no other way. And similarly in society and culture, if we just follow Krishna's plan, gradually everything will prosper. But if we make our own quick solutions, we'll get quick results, but in the end, we will have nothing except anxieties, frustrations, complexities and confusions. It is the nature of Maya. So Maharaj Parikshit, he is speaking to the bull and the cow. He says to the bull, why is it that you are suffering like this? Now, he's the monarch, he's the king. He wants to get the
verdict.
He wants to get the evidence against Kali. If the bull says that this man, he has beat me, then Pariksha could easily say, aha, you die, rascal. But the bull is a great devotee. The bull didn't blame Kali. The bull started speaking very deep. He said, actually, you are asking why I am suffering? Well, there are so many different people who have so many different opinions in this regard. There are the six basic philosophies. The philosophy of Kanada, Vaisheshika philosophy. Gautama, the philosophy of logic. Patanjali, the philosophy of mystic yoga. Kapila taught Sankhya philosophy. Jaimini, Karma Mimamsa philosophy. Vyasadeva taught Vedanta philosophy. They are all explaining what is suffering from different points of view. Some that it is all, Bull is explaining, some are explaining that all suffering are based on our previous karmic activities coming back to us. Some are saying that all suffering is ultimately coming from the truth, the impersonal Brahman. Some are saying that all suffering are caused by material nature, which is all of the atomic molecules within this material nature. They're moving here, there, and everywhere. They are the cause of all suffering. So there are so many different explanations. And then he says, and some say that nobody can know why people suffer. With your intelligence, with your mind, with your senses, it is inconceivable, it is unknowable. But ultimately, the bull is revealing the highest of all philosophies, the philosophy of a Vaishnava, that Krishna is sarva-karana-karana. Bahunam janmanam ante jnanavam ampupadyate vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sadurlava. After many, many births and many, many deaths of studying and following all of these various philosophies, ideas, some philosophies are born of scripture, some philosophies are born of speculation, some philosophies are born of just so many experiences in this world. And every philosopher is trying to defeat every other philosopher, but they're all suffering. So many words, but they cannot stop the suffering. Vedanta philosophy is something different. It not only explains the cause of suffering perfectly, but it also explains the solution to suffering. The cause of all causes is Krishna, Vasudeva Sama. Vasudeva is the cause of all causes. And a devotee understands that he is the cause of my suffering. I may have my karma and I have may have my experiences, but without the sanction of the Lord, nothing can take place. The cow and the bull are spotless. They had never incurred any sin, but still they are suffering terribly. Why? Yudhisthira Maharaj, the Pandavas, they were sinless persons. Why they suffered so terribly? Just to reveal the glory of the Lord. The bull and the cow, who were sinless, free of karma, were put in such a miserable condition where they were weeping tears, standing on one leg, crying and urinating. Such a piteous condition. Anyone who would see it, their hearts would melt in compassion. Krishna put them in that situation just to show the world the glory of such a ruler as Maharaj Parikshit, to glorify his devotee. So amongst Vaishnavas who take shelter of Krishna, they are under Krishna's control. Mahatmanas tumam bharata dai vim prakriti mashrita. The Mahatmas, they are under Krishna's personal energy. And yes, we may have our sinful karma, but it cannot act upon us unless Krishna personally and directly sanctions it. That is how he deals with his devotee. And therefore, a devotee will never blame anyone or anything for anything. A devotee will accept that this is the mercy of the Lord. I deserve so much worse. What is my sins? What is my karma? What is my previous lives? Untold suffering should be upon me. But Krishna is giving me just a little. For what reason? Ultimately, it is for our purification. Ultimately, it is for our spiritual enlightenment. Immediately, it is inconceivable. Bhishma Dev, that great Mahajan, he spoke those words to Maharaj Yudhisthira while laying in a bed of arrows on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Why, you Pandavas, religion personified, why you suffered your whole lives through? There is only one explanation, that it is the inconceivable will of the Lord. The greatest philosophers, the greatest scholars, the greatest speculators, none of them could understand. Krishna's will is supreme. It is inconceivable. But we, fools, we want to give the reason. It is because of this. It is because of you. I am in distress because of you. Look what you have done to me. Why you have spoken this to me, why you have acted this way to me. Now look at my condition, I'm anxiety, I cannot chant my rounds properly because of you. Bhishma Dev, the Mahajan, he is speaking that no one can understand the inconceivable will of the Lord. But we are saying, oh, I understand. I know, it's all your fault. Or it's the weather's fault. Or it's this person's fault, or that thing's fault. We always want to blame something for our sufferings. But a devotee knows that Krishna is the cause of all causes, and there is a mysterious reason and meaning behind everything. And if we just accept it with faith and go on with our devotional service and know that, yes, how it's happening, why it's happening, that I may not be able to understand, but it's happening ultimately by the will of the Lord. He is the cause of all causes, and he is good. He will never do anything that is harmful for his devotee. Whatever comes is always for my ultimate good. And if we accept it with a grateful heart and go on faithfully in our Krishna consciousness, tolerating or bearing whatever difficulties may be, then we receive the ultimate blessing of the Lord. Yasyaham anagrinami harishyetadhanam shanai. When Krishna wants to show special mercy to his devotee, sometimes he takes everything away, turns everyone against them. Very difficult situation. When that happened to Srila Prabhupada, he wrote a poem. He said, I'm simply laughing. Ha ha ha. Very nice. How Krishna is doing like this. The foaming bubbles on this ocean of material existence, I'm seeing them just bursting and evaporating right before my eyes. I simply laugh. He was seeing it as Krishna's mercy. He was seeing it as an opportunity for wonderful things. This cow and this ultimately, so that the whole world will understand the glories of Maharaj Parikshit. That is the inconceivable will of the Lord. And similarly, whatever difficulties we may be going through in our life, ultimately, Krishna wants to glorify his devotee through it all. He wants to glorify our spiritual masters. He wants to glorify our own soul. And there's no other reason. That ultimate reason we can understand. But the temporal, immediate reasons are inconceivable, and we should simply accept it as such. Suffering will come. All philosophies, all education is ultimately simply to try to relieve suffering from society. This material world is a place of misery. People go to college in pursuit of higher knowledge and education. But really, what is their reason? They want to somehow or other avoid suffering. But you cannot. Maya cheats us, giving us so many doctrines and so many alternatives. But we suffer. Vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlava. Rajavidyarajaguyam pavitramitamutamam pratyakshavakamam dharamam shushukam karatamabhyayam. But this is the king of education, the path of bhakti, because it frees you all suffering. It gives you real bliss. How is that? Even in suffering, if it helps us remember Krishna, we experience truth. We experience ecstasy. In every situation, whether we're in this material world or beyond. So, let us follow the line of the great Vaishnavas. There are also some thinkers who believe that no one can ascertain the cause of distress by argumentation, nor know it by imagination, nor express it by words. O sage amongst kings, judge for yourself by thinking over all this with your own intelligence. Is there any questions?
Maharaj, Prabhupada says that the natural economy is the best economy. Just do the natural things and completely rely on that. But we specifically, the grahasthas in Bombay, we do all sorts of artificial things.
Like the stock market.
That is what I... It is on the piece of paper. We are just translating for lakhs and lakhs.
Are there any stocks for working bulls and oxen? Is there any such companies like that?
No. Up to now, I have not seen a single company.
You have not seen? Very well. What is your question?
So I just wanted to know that anything Prabhupada said regarding any stock exchange or some share certificates or something like that.
Prabhupada said so many things about everything. But essentially, if you are Krishna conscious and perform your particular occupation in Krishna consciousness, offering the results to Krishna, taking shelter of the holy name of Krishna, then that is the path of perfection. Any other questions? Yes?
Maharaj, you are saying that all the devotees of the Lord are also under Krishna's Devi Prakriti. So, what is the difference between a neophyte devotee and an advanced pure devotee? Because as the sloka says that yetham prapadantam samaya bhajami yaham, and I reward you accordingly. So only a pure devotee who has completely surrendered to the Lord is in the Lord's complete personal protection. But what I seem to understand from your lecture is that not only the advanced pure devotees but also neophyte devotees are also equally under Krishna's personal care and guidance. So is there any difference or is it the same thing?
When you take to the path of Krishna consciousness sincerely and you connect the disciplic succession of great souls, by the mercy of those great souls and disciplic succession, Krishna personally sees to your spiritual purification. He personally takes your life into his own consideration. You are no longer simply floating in the waves of karmic reactions. But to the degree we surrender, to the degree we're Krishna conscious, to that degree Krishna will personally reveal himself as the cause of all causes in all of our life. A neophyte devotee is under Krishna's direction, but is not very able to perceive that, appreciate that. But to the degree we surrender, we could actually experience Krishna at every stage. And to the degree we surrender, Krishna will not only just keep us under his energy, his divine energy, but he will very, very, very personally be orchestrating every moment of our life in such a way that we can progress back home, back to Godhood.
What Krishna says is, "Dadami buddhi yogam tam yam apyanti te," that I give intelligence by which you can understand my mercy in your life.
Krishna gives intelligence through guru, through sadhu, through shastra, as well as through his own existence as the Antaryami, the Lord in the heart, Paramatma. In these ways he is giving intelligence to his devotee. And according to our sincerity, he will give intelligence. According to our willingness to serve, he will give us intelligence. Srila Prabhupada wanted us to simply be willing to serve. That is a disciple, good disciple, real disciple, someone who is willing to serve, a willing instrument. In Bhagavad Gita, at beginning Arjuna was not willing. He had his own ideas, he had his own conceptions. Something like we were at New Vrindavan. Yes, Prabhupada says like this, but if we do it this way it will work out better. Actually, 99% of the devotees, they were just following. They had nothing to, but they all learned the lesson together. So Arjuna was thinking, I know, I'm a scholar. I have experience in the world. But after hearing Bhagavad Gita, what was Arjuna's qualification? He was willing. He was simply willing to serve any way Krishna wanted him to serve. Srila Prabhupada said, if my devotees were simply willing to serve any way I wanted them to serve, the whole world could be Krishna conscious within 18 days. Through Arjuna, Krishna made the whole world Krishna conscious in 18 days because he was a willing servant. But to be a willing servant is not easy in this age of Kali Yuga. Because you have your mind
which will give so much opposition. And you have your senses, which will give so much opposition. Sometimes we're willing and sometimes we're not willing. Sometimes we doubt. Sometimes we're envious. Sometimes we're angry. Sometimes due to greed or to hunger or to thirst, we're no longer willing to serve, but we just want something else for ourselves. But to the degree we are willing to serve, willing to be utilized for the enjoyment of the Lord, to that degree Krishna will give us intelligence. How to know Him, how to serve Him, how to approach Him. And He will give us the clarity to understand it. You see, not only does Krishna give the intelligence, but He gives the capacity to understand that knowledge. According to our willingness to be utilized and enjoyed by Him, that's the sign of our sincerity. Krishna will give us the capacity to understand and realize the truths that are spoken in Guru Sadhu Shastra. Not by scholarship. You could memorize billions of verses and you will never understand the meaning of any of them. You can read billions of books and know so much philosophy, but through that process you will never understand the meaning of any of it. But if you are just willing to surrender, willing, then whatever you read, whatever slokas you learn, whatever else Krishna is giving you, you will actually be able to understand it. You will actually have the power to purify your heart. Bhaktyamam abhi janati. It is only through bhakti. And what is bhakti? The willingness to serve despite all adversity. The adversities of the mind and the senses, the adversities of the society around us. To tolerate all of those and maintain our willingness to serve, our willingness to be enjoyed by Krishna. As Guru Maharaj is teaching us, to that degree, Krishna reveals Himself. Thank you very much.